Thank you to Red Eye, the Photography Network, for partnering with us to produce Season 3 of the Photo Ethics Podcast. Red Eye is a not-for-profit organization with a strong ethical focus, offering support and opportunities to help you advance your photography and your career. Find out more at redeye.org.uk. Welcome to Season 3 of the Photo Ethics Podcast. I'm your host, Savannah Dodd, and I'm the founder of the Photography Ethics Center. Each week, I'll be talking with an accomplished photographer about the ethics of their practice. Today, in the 12th and final episode of Season 3, we'll be talking with Annie Tritt about intentions and impact. Annie Tritt seeks to create work that facilitates connection to both internal and external transformation. Formerly a public school teacher and stay-at-home parent, Annie began their career in photojournalism in 2006 and has worked around the world since then. Annie's long-term project, Transcending Self, brings visibility to the complex issues facing transgender and non-binary youth. Annie has worked for a wide range of clients, from commercial clients like Citibank and Sony to editorial clients like the New York Times and Vox. In 2020, they received a Catchlight Fellowship grant. How long have you been a photographer?
I've been a photographer for about, I could say 18. For a while, I was saying 15 for about like 7 years. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to bump it up to 18. My daughters are 22. So I kind of base it on their life. And I wasn't a photographer before they were born. And it was a few years after. So probably closer to like 17.
That's great. And how did you first get into photography?
It's different than a lot of people, I think, because I wasn't someone that was, when I was young, I had a camera. Like, that didn't happen. I always loved art. I was always creating art. And in undergrad, I was an art major, mostly because I would not have graduated had I not been an art major, to be honest. And there were photography classes in that. And I had friends that became very successful, talented photographers. So I knew photography as a medium, as a way of expression. I knew people that were doing it. The way I became a photographer is that I was trying to figure out a career. So it wasn't even something I was doing peripherally. And I was traveling. I was photographing, I think, like Hasidic kids in a playground or something. But I remember the moment. I don't even know where I was. And I had been politically and socially active since I was probably in elementary school. So it came as a light bulb that actually I could combine traveling, social activism, and art into one career, because I knew people that were doing it, which was photojournalism. So I had that idea, and I didn't know how to use a camera really at the time. And we adopted my daughters maybe 2 years after I had that concept in my head. So I had been learning photography, and then it took a while because I had a break for being a parent. I find so many photographers are like, I loved it. And when I was little, my grandfather gave me a camera.
That is literally my story. Well, my grandfather did give me a camera. Okay. No, but that's great. Right.
I didn't have that story.
No, it's great to hear though. And I love the way that you describe that, you know, the way that you were bringing together these different interests, and photography is very much a vehicle for activism. And so what kinds of things then did you pursue and start photographing?
At first, I was just learning because I had a film camera then, and all I knew was that photojournalists use a 24 lens. That's what I had heard. And that I didn't know how to expose even. So there was a meter in it, and I would have the meter go, it was a red line right in the middle. And I realized I didn't actually have any clue how to take a photo. So at first I was taking classes just to learn how to use my camera. And my daughters were young. So I think the first thing I did was, there was a family across the street that the kids would come over to my house and play. The mother had a lot of kids. They had been homeless, in and out of homelessness. And I photographed that family a lot as they became homeless again, as they moved. But in retrospect, I shouldn't have done that. You know, in retrospect, really thinking about race and class and understanding, like, that was not my story to tell. And as a white person living in a Black neighborhood, not having experienced homelessness, it being something that I was working on, I feel like that the photos are beautiful, actually. I still love them. And I had a really good relationship with the family. But in retrospect, that really wasn't my story to tell, I don't think, at the time. But I didn't know. You know, mm-hmm. I learned. I think I was probably doing what was done at the time. Mm-hmm. I went back to grad school, and a project that I was proud of and feel like it was done with heart and done well was I met this young man. I was interning at the Oakland Tribune, and I met this young man named Justin while I was photographing. I don't know what the story was about, but this was in 2006, maybe. So it was pretty relevant then. He had returned from Iraq or Afghanistan. He took a dishonorable discharge to take care of his mother, who he was the only child, who was dying of cancer. And so I spent years with them as he did this. And I thought it was a beautiful, I mean, not my photos, but the story of how we treat the military, how we treat young men. Here is a young man who is doing the most beautiful thing I could think of. And yet he's being punished by our government when he volunteered to go fight. His last day of boot camp was the day before 9/11. That story, I felt like I did have a lot to say, and I got to know them intimately and his mom. And I felt like that was done more responsibly and something that I consciously knew why I was doing it and what I was trying to say.
When you say responsibly, I wonder what constitutes responsible storytelling, do you think? You know, what makes that a responsible process or not a responsible process?
I think about that a lot, and I obviously don't have the answers, but I think about ethics like constantly, about everything. You know, it's something that runs through my mind. And it's a really good question. I mean, something we even have to question is, why do we do photojournalism? Is it useful? Like, I think in everything we do, it's really helpful to question what we're doing, why we're doing it, and what is the outcome, right? And to me, responsible is kind of big. It's the why. Why am I doing this? And what do I hope to achieve? I mean, and I haven't thought this out, so I'm just saying it off the cuff. But what is my relationship to the people I'm photographing, right? Not just, oh, I have a good relationship, but it's even sometimes, am I curious and I know nothing about this topic and I really want to learn? That could be ethical, right? But like, what am I bringing to this? What do I have to say? What is my social location in relation to these people, right? Should I be the person telling this story? Maybe I'll have a dialogue with those people, right? And what do I want to illuminate with this story? Am I just telling a sad story that's going to make people sad? Is this too complex from my life experience to really understand? You know, what do I bring so that I can tell this story in a way that has an outcome, maybe, that is responsible to me foremost to the subjects? And that's different. A lot of people would probably disagree with me, right? They think the larger topic is more important. But to me, the people in the photos are my number one concern. So am I doing this in a way that feels right to you? And are we telling your story in a way that is working for you? I think there's a lot. I don't know that I touched on everything. With that, I felt like I was talking to me about war, about race in a way that I felt like I could, about young men, about how we treat people, about love. You know, it was also like I was talking about love. Mm-hmm. Like, look at this young man loving his mother. Like, there's something so beautiful in that story to me, you know, such beautiful love, which photojournalism doesn't often talk about. Like, it's always just negative. But I thought, wow, this is a beautiful story about love to me, you know.
And you said something there earlier that I thought was really important. You were saying, you know, even though you might have a really good relationship or close relationship with somebody, like your neighbors, for example, that it still wasn't your story to tell. And I think that that's a really interesting point, because I sometimes think that those things get conflated, that if we know people, then we can tell their story. Right. So I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit.
caring for someone and knowing them is different than being able to tell their story, right? And there is value sometimes in someone from the outside coming in and seeing something that an individual or a group can't see about themselves. I prefer when it's something positive than something negative, but there's been such a misbalance of that view, right? 90% of the work, that's changed, but up until maybe 5 years ago was that view. I think we need every view, but these kids played with my kids. They came over, and especially at the time, I could not possibly understand what her experience was as a mom, you know, having, I think there were 6 kids or something, and she used drugs, you know, she was abused. They became homeless many times. Like, none of that was my experience, right? And I hadn't studied it. And just because I could go to her house and the kids came over my house and we liked each other, like, what am I going to illuminate about that? I showed her caring for them, but I wasn't going to illuminate anything, I don't think, about that story. And it's been done by white, honestly, people going into Black neighborhoods over and over again, right? And that story would have been beautifully told about how the system is the problem with somebody to each other. And my God, this mother also did so much for her kids. Like, the amount that she was doing for them to love them and house them and clothe them and make sure they had fun was enormous. Like, that would have been beautiful and show her struggles. I didn't even barely know how to use my camera. Like, why am I doing this? And where is it going to? Like, what am I going to do with this? Because there is also an expectation of, I think people want to be seen, but they want people to see their story. So if I'm just going to show it to my class at a community college, does this person really understand that? Or if it could end up somewhere public, do they really understand that? And I misconstrued the closeness as something I could tell, and it was not mine to tell at the time. Probably not now either.
Have you spoken with her since or shown her the work?
No, I lost touch. She ended up in a relationship. They ended up moving again, and she ended up in a relationship with an abusive woman who didn't want me around. And so we lost touch. I knew someone who actually was a social worker working with one of the kids. So I was like, I know you can't tell me, but I just want to make sure they're okay. But that woman didn't want me around, probably because she was being abused. And so I lost touch with them.
You said earlier, you know, that when you first started out, you were telling stories maybe a little bit like that, you know, that you maybe weren't the best place to do it. And it was just what was done. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, how has your practice changed and how did you make those changes and how did you learn new things along the way? You know, what resources were available to you?
My practice has, I mean, I don't do much of my own work now, just financially. It's really hard to do your own work. I started through people talking to me and looking at, like, what am I doing and why am I doing it? The project I did about trans youth, I mean, without realizing my own gender, was interesting because I didn't realize I was telling my own story. But I went into it with a topic that I was incredibly curious about. And I was curious about it because I was curious about my own life, you know, and having been in the queer community since I was young and doing a year of research before I photographed anyone, a lot of communication with me and the subjects. I don't have, like, the people being photographed, you know, and their families about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And a lot of back and forth and being clear the whole time about what is it that I am trying to say? What is it that I want to know? Communicating that. And it showed to me in the way people trust me and how much trust people have put in me. You know, I think before that, I was, yeah, more maybe too careful about what I chose and really thought long and hard about why I'm doing it, you know, and where is it going to appear? And, you know, why me? Like, why am I the person to do this? Just because I want to is not good enough for me. You know, and not worrying so much about my career, right? At the beginning, like I've told this in another podcast, but I was in grad school when Katrina happened and I ran there. I had no business being there. I had zero business being there. And the professors at school told me that and I didn't listen, you know, but I had never been in the South, really. I didn't understand the issues with this hurricane. I didn't know anything. I went to Mississippi instead of New Orleans, but there was nothing I could add to that if they weren't being published anywhere, right? I did it for my career. And that was like 100% wrong. I was drinking water that people could have drank. And there were plenty of brilliant people there that had a lot to say and had places to put it that could do work that I couldn't, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't do that again.
I think that still happens a lot now, doesn't it? Like, I know that was a big thing that a few weeks ago people were saying to young photographers who were considering going to Ukraine.
Don't go to Ukraine. Right. And especially now, the great thing about social media, the great thing about the internet is that there is almost no reason to send people that don't live there, you know, right now. I think there is some reason, sure, sending a veteran who's done something like this over and over again, who can be safe, but it's really easy now to find someone who has an inside view that understands the topic, who's incredibly talented, to really know how to talk about what's going on. Yeah, so I think there's a lot that's changed. I think there's a lot that's changed.
And can you maybe give an example of an ethical dilemma that you have encountered in your own work and maybe how you've navigated that?
I think I think about ethics way too much, so I worry about it way too much. I can. So I just thought, I'm not going to say what the publication is, but it was the biggest job I'd ever been offered, to photograph a story about detransitioning, which actually is not a thing. Detransitioning is not a thing. It's made up by anti-trans people. And because the media feels like it needs to give both sides, kind of like during the Trump administration, there's not two sides. I feel like during the Holocaust, there aren't two sides. In an effort to be fair, we've been told we have to show both sides, but there isn't always both sides, right? I'm not supposed to have opinions, but I do. When a white police officer shoots an unarmed Black man, there's not two sides to me. When I was offered it, I read the article and I was like, this is unethical. Like, I could have told you who was in this article. I knew these detransitioners. There's three of them. They're in every article. And I said that if you publish this, it's going to cause some parents to not let their kids transition. And there's a good chance those kids will commit suicide, and I can't photograph this. And so I needed the money, the having a huge story, like with a cover story in a magazine. I wanted it. And I turned it down. And when the article came out, I gave it to a friend who I knew would photograph it. And it got plummeted by the trans community, you know. But I had to turn it down, not for my name, but because I was like, well, the repercussions of this article is that some people will try to kill themselves. I can't do that, you know, I can't do that. So that's a place where there was an ethical dilemma, and I'm happy with what I chose.
Yeah. The impact, again, I guess, like you were talking about earlier, really comes in there. And you do commercial photography as well. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. How do you situate the ethics of your commercial work? Is that quite similar in some ways to the other work that you do, or is it quite different?
It's hard to say it publicly, but they won't even listen to this. The only way I can survive is to do commercial work. If I was not doing commercial work, I couldn't. The amount of money that I make from editorial, in my experience, does not sustain me to be able to live. I don't have a choice. I've been lucky in that I've only been offered ethical. Is that true? I guess I did a couple of things that were not unethical or not ethical, like they were selling products. But most of my work has been with queer jobs. Mm-hmm. So I get pigeonholed into that. And if I could do that, in some ways, it feels more ethical. Some of it I was thinking about feels more ethical because there's so much that's unethical in editorial and journalism. It's like if you're selling a product, right? So let's say something I haven't done. If I'm selling iPhones, I'm not pretending that I'm doing anything but selling something. And there's something really transparent about that. Whereas the transparency in editorial in photojournalism is so dicey, right? There is this idea that we're doing something, but I don't know. You know, I was doing a lot of work with celebrities and like, I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to like, I don't care what they do or don't do, you know? I love photographing actors. It's really fun. It's super fun. And they're humans. They're just humans that are equally interesting to me as anyone else. They're not more or less interesting. They're just people. but it feels more unethical the amount of attention we put in our society about what any particular celebrity does or does not do. If we had all that attention on anything else, we probably could solve it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the journalism I was doing, I don't know, did someone buy a house? Did they not buy a house? Like, or, you know, when I started out, I was standing outside of courthouses waiting for people to walk in and out of the courthouse. And that feels incredibly unethical because they haven't been convicted yet. Even my first job was with someone from the mob, but they haven't been convicted. I just feel like there's something incredibly unethical about waiting for people to walk in and out of a courthouse that haven't been convicted yet. And even if they've been convicted, it's like, that's not what I wanted to do. I want to talk about, as a writer, maybe you don't have more choice, but like the prison system and who gets arrested and who doesn't and what's behind that, not this particular person. And then once they've been arrested, you know, like, am I serving society by photographing someone that's been arrested? Like, I don't think so.
Yeah. I think what you said as well about the transparency in commercial photography is really interesting. You know, I totally get what you're saying. And, you know, earlier you said something about, you know, you're not supposed to have an opinion about these things if you're photographing them. But we all do. Of course we do. You know, of course we all.
I have huge opinions.
Yeah. So that idea of, you know, transparency and objectives and stuff, I really get what you mean about the, in some ways, it's maybe simpler in commercial work.
It's simpler. And I mean, like, there's something about the British newspapers that I appreciate is the transparency of their opinion, right? Like, British newspapers have, they're not unbiased. They're like, this is the liberal paper, this is the concern. And at least from an outsider, like, it's very clear which newspaper is which, right? And here they're all supposed to be unbiased, but they're not. They're not unbiased. And there's something liberatory to me in speaking about biases.
Yeah.
And being able to see your own and then maybe pivot.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Could you talk a little bit more and tell us a little bit more about your process behind the project that you did on transgender youth?
So I've talked about it so much, but when I started out, it was 2014, and it's hard to imagine now, but there was like almost nothing in the quote unquote media about transgender youth. And so my process initially was, it took a year of researching and learning and reaching out before I did anything. As it evolved, the process is collaborative between me, the young people, and if they're young enough, their parents, you know. And the way that I photograph is really like, I want to illuminate something about that individual. And it's not about them being trans. It's just kind of like a soulful portrait of a person. I spend time with them, you know, spending time and allowing them to show me what's important to them, where they love, you know, so that I'm hoping that the image captures a soulful image of this person who happens to be trans, you know. And then along with that, there's an interview that at first I couldn't figure out how to interview really young kids, but I have. So, and with them, their parents, that again, can not tell the story I want to tell, but like through the right questions, tell the story that's important for them to tell, with the hope that for them, it feels really empowering and that other people can see trans non-binary youth in a different way. Mm. You know, which has happened. There's such a backlash now in the US against trans families. So I need to get back to it because it feels really important because the Republicans are attacking in so many states trans youth, their parents and doctors that help them. And I, at the time, was doing portraits. So before, my stuff had been more documentary style. So that one was the first one where I was trying to approach a concept with portraits. But I really like portraits because in a long-term documentary, sure, I spend a lot of time with someone. But if I'm just going to be with someone a little bit, I spend way more time with them doing a portrait than if I'm just following them around. Because if I'm following them around, I'm not talking to them so much, you know, and a portrait to me allows the person to have a little more control of their image, a lot more, right? Because there's more of a, if I'm documentary, I'm just standing back Right. And but I'm still making the choice about what moment and where they're not. Right. So even if it's their life, like I'm not photographing every second of it. So it's still me making choices. Whereas with portraits, for me, it's very collaborative. Like, where do you want to be? Do you like being there? And I'll say, well, you know, I can explain, well, I know you love being here, but the sun is bad. You know, I can explain visually why I can't do it, but I can say, well, we can come back here later, but is there somewhere else? Is this important to you? And it becomes, for me, way more collaborative so that it's less an image I'm creating or taking, but that it's something we're doing together.
Mm. Yeah.
It feels more empowering to me than a more reportage style, which, you know, might seem more objective because you're not interfering. But again, a 30-second difference could be a completely different image.
Yeah.
The time of day is a completely different image. And so as the photographer, there's still a ton of your perspective and views in that photo.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think we're always making all these subjective decisions when we take a photograph, right? We're not even really aware of them a lot of the time.
Right.
You know, I guess that's what I sort of hope a lot of my work can do, is to try to make people more aware of those moments. You know, you said earlier about ethics, it's everything, you know? Yeah, because we are. I think all of those subjective decisions are also ethical decisions, aren't they? In a lot of ways.
They are. Right. And so if I go into someone's kitchen and it's messy, and my kitchen is really clean, like I'm going to notice that is something, ooh, their kitchen's messy, it means something. Someone whose kitchen is messy might go and they wouldn't even notice it because they're like, oh, it looks like my kitchen. And so they wouldn't take mm-hmm. that photo, right? And so we're both making a decision about that person and creating an image. Whereas if I talk to the person and be like, how do you feel? Like, yeah, I don't care if my kitchen's messy, it's me. Well, do you want a photo? You know, oh, I'm ashamed, I don't want to show that. Well, somebody might say, well, that's important, but why is it important? Is it really important to this story? Are you talking about people that have messy kitchens? Or do you think poor people have messy kitchens because you're not poor? You know, like, are you making a decision about this person's, or what, people who have cancer have messy, whatever the thing is that you're, are you seeing something that you're making a judgment about and you don't even think about it? And it really is not about that, or this person does not want that to be shown. Is it super important? But when I'm having a dialogue with someone, and some people would say, well, then I can't really tell a story, but I can, because I actually talk to people. I say, oh yeah, I know you don't really want, you're a little embarrassed, but I think this is important. You know, like, let's say someone is ill. Like, I want people to show how hard it is when you're living alone and have, and are ill, to take care of your kitchen. I think people might be empathetic. Would that be okay? And then the person could say, oh, I hadn't thought of that. Let me think about it. You know, and I feel like then there can be more of a dialogue and you come to a decision together. Right. And if that person says no, there may be another way to show, this is what I want to show and this is what I think. What do you think? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm still taking that person's experience as more important than the global. And I, as a person, always will.
Absolutely. And I think relatedly, I think that's such a great way that you describe that, and such a good example as well about the messy kitchen. And, you know, I think there are also a lot of reasons why somebody might not want to show a messy kitchen, for example. You know, we don't have to necessarily understand their reasons, or, you know, it might not be logical. But I think what, you know, you've said is so key about, you know, their preferences and their comfort level being central.
And if you go into it understanding, what am I trying to say? Let's say there's a story about people that are ill, and I want people to care about people that are living alone and ill. There's probably so many other ways to show that. You don't have to push. And I think when I was started, it was like, keep pushing, push, get that mm-hmm. photo, right? If the objective is to say, I really care about healthcare in America, and it's really hard to be ill and alone, how else could you show that, right? And if you can't with that person, find a different subject. I don't like the words, find a different person to photograph, because to me, the global story can still be told without hurting someone's personal life. And when I came into doing the trans project, so many people said no, because they were like, people in the media have burned us and we're not trusting again. Mm. So some of the people have bad intentions. A lot of them had good intentions, but they overshadowed that human's life to tell a story. And it does not have to be done that way. And I saw someone do it again recently. White photographers, maybe some photographers, go to Africa and photograph naked kids, right? And that thought is like, would you allow, and if you're a parent, a stranger, if your kid is running around in underwear outside, to go take a photograph of your kid and talk about poverty? It is 100% unethical. Is talking about poverty important? Yeah. Right? Is talking about how it happened? Yeah. Do you photograph someone's kids naked that you don't know? No. No, you don't do that. It doesn't mean that we can't talk about poverty, but you have to understand that it also happened there because of colonialism, because of people that look like me. So I think, what am I trying to say? Why am I trying to say it? Where is it going to go? And how does it affect the human that's in this photo is really important to me.
Absolutely. And I guess bringing that, the sort of the conversation full circle, we talked at the start about responsible storytelling. And I guess relatedly, and maybe it's the same answer, but maybe it's a different answer, I like to ask everyone who comes on the podcast, what does photography ethics mean to you? Maybe that's kind of the same, or maybe it's a little bit different for you. What do you think?
I think it's the same. I mean, I think about ethics a lot in everything. You know, I think ethics to me are something that I revisit a lot, you know, in interactions in my daily life. Ethics are about having kind of a baseline of ethics of your life. You know, how do I impact the people around me? How do I impact the environment? What are my big intentions? What are my small intentions? And revisiting that and having dialogue. So in photography, having dialogue with the people in the photos, with yourself, with the people you're working for is harder, you know, but having dialogues as a community as to what are we doing as a community. So there's something that and I'm overly ethical, but I can't help it, right? So like, if there's a fire, which I'm in California right now, and there's fires, and someone is taking photos that are capturing the fire, which people need to see, right? How devastating this is. And they post it on social media, and all the comments are from photographers, great photo, you did a great job. I've been like, that is unethical to me. It may be true. Someone's house, someone just lost their house. Publicly, do not do that. It's unethical to me. Send a private message to the person. Hey, you did a really good job. If my house burned down, if I was worried about my grandma's house, if I lost everything and I saw photographers, I would be horrified. This is a tragedy. So that's an impact we have upon others. It doesn't mean that taking the photos is not unethical. Publishing them is not unethical. Having photographers that do a fantastic job at this kind of work is not unethical at all. We need that. But thinking about our impact is ethical, right? And so that's where I think as a community, a lot of us are not thinking. And I see it again and again. And I'm like, just send a private message. It's really simple. And if you're going there and don't have an assignment, and there are already people with an assignment because you want to get that work, maybe that's not ethical. You know, it's not for me to decide. So I think to me, something that's kind of a constant, it's a relationship. Maybe it's a relationship. I haven't thought of it this way. But if you're in a relationship, maybe a dating relationship is easy, right? It's a dialogue. People have to keep talking and they have to keep reevaluating and they have to communicate with each other, right? And so ethics may be something like that, that it's a dialogue between yourself, between others, between the larger global thing and thinking about intention and impact. There's another thing that intention and impact is very different. And so this is something that is also true, is that my intention with going to Katrina was good. I cared deeply. I saw what was happening. It was horrifying to me, right? I was horrified. My intention, I cared. I wanted something to change. My impact was not aligned with my intention. I care deeply about poverty, but my intention to do something may not be aligned with my impact. And so within dialogue, there's also listening, and ethics are also largely, I think, listening to the groups of people that are being featured in stories, because they are going to know the impact. And whether I'll include myself, it's been consistent that people dismiss the people that are saying, this is the impact upon my community. this is the impact upon what you were doing on me, to not dismiss that, but to listen and then say, well, how can we do this better? How can we do this better? Because that's not the intended impact. So I think ethics is a lot about a dialogue, but you have to have the ethics to begin with. I think the majority of people that want to tell stories, I imagine, have good intentions. If you want to tell a story about global warming, you must care about it, right? You must, like, I care about the earth. If you want to tell a story about hunger, like, you must care about hunger, or you wouldn't have the intention to do that. But then there has to be like a larger thought, and there's a lot of ego in this work, and learning to tame one's own ego. And it's not about us. It's not about me.
This is the final episode in season 3 of the Photo Ethics Podcast. You can stay connected with us by enrolling in our online courses on photojournalism ethics at www.photoethics.thinkific.com or by following us on social media. We're on Twitter at PhotoEthics and on Instagram at PhotoEthics Center. Thanks very much for joining me throughout season 3. In each episode of the podcast, we ask our guests, what does photography ethics mean to you? This is a question that everyone in the photography industry should be able to answer. That's why the Photography Ethics Center is asking you, our listeners, to commit to writing and publishing your own statement of ethics. Visit www.photoethics.org/ethics to learn more and to make the pledge committing to ethical transparency, accountability, and awareness. That's www.photoethics.org/ethics. This podcast was edited and digitally produced by Ellie Gascoigne.